Thank you. I want to welcome everybody to the April 22nd public meeting for the San Luis Obispo Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. And for the public record, the board met in closed session and discussed a number of items, including student waivers for the CASI exam, real property, labor negotiations with the three bargaining units at the district, and a personnel matter regarding the superintendent's evaluation. The first item on the agenda for tonight, while we're in open session, is to make sure or see if there's any questions or any changes that the board wants to make to the order of business tonight. Seeing none, we'll go right into approval of the minutes. This will be two votes. The first is for the April 8th.
Legislators and the local newspapers on the budget crisis. And initially, the website, and I announced it, initially the website was saveslowschools.org. And in hearing from other areas of the county, they thought that it should say saveslowcountyschools.org. And it was changed, and it was referred that way at the last meeting, Ms. Holmes. And if you could change it, I would appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the appropriate change to the minutes. Thank you very much, Mr. Buckman. Are there any other comments before the vote is called?
No.
Seeing none, all in favor of the motion made by Mr. Millar, indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It passes 7-0. And the next minutes are the meeting of April 15th, 2008. And for the five board members who were present, is there anyone who wishes to make a motion regarding those minutes? Catherine makes a motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Unger. Any discussion? Okay. Okay, Mr. Millar and Ms. Dickinson will abstain. Hearing no discussion, all in favor? Opposed? Passes 5-0. Correspondence next to the board. I think there was one item listed here, and I think there are two other items that I wanted to mention. There was a correspondence from the Los Osos Community Services District, the Golden State Water Company, and the B&T Mutual Water Company in Los Osos dated April 10th regarding the exploratory wells that the district is pursuing at the Los Osos Middle School site. There was a second piece of correspondence, which I'll give to Ms. Holmes, from Julian Crocker, Dr. Crocker, the County Superintendent of Schools, regarding the fiscal year 2007-2008 second interim report. It was sent to my P.O. box, and it states that I concur with the positive certification for fiscal year 2007-2008, and I commend the district for the quality education provided to all students and the financial reserve that has been provided and the excellent financial care for the district. And I'll pass that down to Ms. Holmes for the record. There was a third piece of correspondence that came to me, and it was from the, very appropriately tonight, I think, the United States Marine Corps, inviting educators to the Marine Corps Educators Workshop. Is it Marika or Marisha?
Marisa,
thank you. Zimmerman?
Yes.
Thank you. And do you want to identify the person who's with you?
Yes, I will. Thank you for this opportunity to address the board. I'm Marisa Zimmerman. This is Ruth, my youngest daughter. I have four children. My oldest two are thankfully at Hawthorne Elementary. I'm here representing Code Pink today. We are a group of 500 men and women locally. Our chapter is part of a national nonprofit that seeks to end the Iraq War and redirect the money to life-affirming activities, notably education, healthcare, and the environment. While we can all agree on the atrociousness of war, and many of us have friends and family that have served in tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, my visit here is to bring your attention to the fiscal impacts of the Iraq War in our county. Even without mentioning the $3 trillion price tag of the Iraq War that economic Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz and Linda Blimes conservatively estimated. We do know that San Luis Obispo County taxpayers have already paid $58 million for this illegal war in the past 5 years. Fiscal year 08 will see SLO County send another $9.3 million to Washington for the war. Yet our county coffers will be short by $18 million. Our publicly educated students will face budget cutbacks of $503 each under the governor's plan, budget plan. It's a shame that in the state of California, where we have the eighth largest economy in the world, about the same as mainland China, that we were ranked 47th among 50 states in public education for the 06-07 school year. You know, we can't really spare that much money here, for education, that is. All of us recognize the impact that this will have on San Luis Coastal Unified School District. Unless we rearrange our priorities, the deficit will hopefully be covered by already heroically overworked teachers and a PTA and principals and certainly parents. Ironically, the same children that will be shortchanged in their education because of this war are the ones that will be saddled with the enormous governmental debt as they grow up and enter the workforce. We of Code Pink suggest passing a resolution proclaiming opposition to the Iraq War. In this way, we can join our voices together and be stronger to channel our much-needed financial resources back into our schools. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maurice. For there's nobody here. That's now, yeah. Yeah. Mr. Buckman?
Okay. First of all, I want to thank all the teachers that have been sending emails. It's really important for us to hear from you, and I appreciate it. And I don't always respond to all of them, but I do read them all. I also want to thank the staff at Morvay High School, and especially the principal, Pete Zotovich, for putting on a great open house, music, dancing, plays, artwork, science. It was very impressive. And I had a great time. On the ROP front, just before the meeting, I got an email from Jim Souza, the superintendent of the ROP program, with the results from the April state contest, the Skills USA contest. And San Luis Coastal had three gold medalists, five silver medalists, and five bronze medalists. And I promise not to release their names because we usually recognize them here, and I don't want to steal that thunder. And I and Catherine attended Kids Day at the Plaza. I get to drive a little school bus that talks to children, and Catherine got to do her thing. So, the petting zoo. So, I'm sorry, sir?
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to find something, and I appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Adrian,
I didn't plan to wear pink, but I'm glad I did. In terms of open houses, Arroyo Grande High School's open house was the same night as Morro Bay High School's, so I didn't attend that, but. I didn't get to mention last week that I enjoyed Pacific Beach's open house and Bishop Peak Teach. And Miss Lampier's garden is beautiful there. Regarding correspondence, we didn't mention Russ Rayburn's letter, but I think it's a very interesting letter. And I would hope that we discuss that further later. In terms of the Marine, I read this carefully too. And, you know, with No Child Left Behind, we have Marine recruiter, we have military recruiters on campus, and I personally, he's visiting us tonight.
Thank you, Adrian. Chris?
Yeah, real quick, and I too wanted to thank Mr. Zotovich and everybody at Morro Bay High for a great night. I did miss the expulsion the other night for this program committee, and we're looking real good for this year, you guys, just to let you know. So far, the committee itself has about 26 different programs that we've sponsored. We went through probably about 200 And we've got some really exciting stuff coming up. One of our keynote speakers is going to be Ruby Payne, who is apparently, I'd never heard of her before, but she is very well known and will be speaking about kind of the effects of poverty on students. And apparently she's a very, very inspiring speaker. So very exciting about that. We're working on our second keynote speaker as well. And they mentioned some names, but nobody's firmed up yet. Could be a big-time person. I was able to attend a meeting with Dr. Crocker at the San Luis Obispo Chamber with their Legislative Action Committee last week. We were asking for the chamber's support on their legislative action days for schools and opposing the cuts to education, but I didn't hear anything back from them. But we want to remind business, if any business people are listening, that good schools are good for business. And then finally, while I was at Morro Bay High School's open house, I met with Linda Quisenberry, who's one of Morro Bay's EL, I guess, coordinators. Is that what that would be, Mr. Zotovich?
Consultant.
And she told me that there's going to be a meeting on May 7th, I believe, at 6:30, and the EL parents are from the Bay Area are invited to go to that. And I'm going to try to get to that and see what issues from our Bay Area, Morro Bay, Los Osos. And so I think that would be real valuable for people to be able to attend.
Thank you, Chris. Walt?
Thank you, John. First, I'd also like to acknowledge the emails from the teachers that I received, and it gave me an opportunity to express my appreciation and admiration for Bruce Bedrigian. And also would like to thank Russ for his letter, and also the email link regarding professional learning communities was very helpful for me. And let's see. Oh, Mark and I were able to attend the County Superintendent of Schools meeting and hear from Jack O'Connell, which was, while not as illuminating as we might want, but I did find his take on...
Well, I did not attend Morro Bay High School's open house because it's always after 7 o'clock on Wednesday, and I don't get off work until 7 o'clock, so I see Mr. Zotovich is here, and I wonder if he could make a change next year to accommodate me specifically, because that is one that I would really like to go to. And then what I have to say seems very kind of not as important, perhaps, as what some other people have said. But I did take Catherine up on her comments. I took them seriously at the last board meeting about how unpalatable the school lunches were. And so I went out the next day to Baywood School and ate a kid's lunch. I didn't take it from a kid, but there was a leftover lunch, and I got it. My take on it was, the salad bar was very nice. It had nice green lettuce. It had broccoli. And carrots, I believe. I think all the kids who came before me probably ate all the beets and the Brussels sprouts and what have you out of it. So I was just left with, you know, what they hadn't selected. And then it was a turkey, a barbecued shredded turkey on a wheat bun, which admittedly was a little congealed looking, but when you bit into it, it was warm and quite edible. I sat down with three other little girls and talked to them about the school lunches, and I got the straight scoop on what they really like, which is the pizza, the corn dogs, and the macaroni and cheese, which is very cheesy. And I talked to the school custodian, who can really give you the story on what just hits the rubbish immediately. So I think, you know, that Sue Thorson does a very good job of working within all the constraints that are placed on her. And I agree there could be a little more creativity maybe to it, and it's something that we might ask them to look at. But this custodian did tell me that when they try to get creative, when they do something like a chow mein or whatever, that's first in the bin. So the kids like things that they can readily identify, apparently. Thanks.
I guess Catherine. I do have a question. better job if we could access the wonderful local produce we have here and make that available to our children. And fortunately, and I sent you guys all this, but I'm not a very good scanner, so it may not have all gone through, but there is a conference this Thursday, which many of us will be attending, and I know Sue Thorson will be there, and it's a conference this Thursday that is from the Farm to School program, and it's promoting local produce that's good for kids and the local economy. So I'll be able to report back to you next week about that. And I also enjoyed Morobe High School's open house and Hawthorne Elementary open house. Sorry, Marilyn, we missed you.
Just to rub it in a little bit more, but that's fine. Thank you, Catherine. Any other comments? Administrators? No student representatives? Okay, seeing none. Assistant Superintendent of Business, Russell Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. There's still not a whole lot of action to report on at the Sacramento area. I think some of the information that's being publicized recently about revenue collections, though, has some interest that the board might find of note, and that is primarily the state goes through a practice of predicting each month's revenue collections based upon an historic perspective. And they'll do corporate taxes, they'll do personal taxes, they'll do sales taxes. They'll do all their revenue sources and make predictions accordingly. And the one particular tax that has been coming up short each and every month is the corporate tax. And in the month of March, the corporate tax receipts were short $912 million, representing 14.5% decline from the budgeted levels. And it brings the year-to-date collections almost $1.2 billion short. And what it means in the sense of the deficit for the state is that when we entered into January before the mid-year cuts that the state enacted, which were really a series of shell games, perhaps, in that they sold additional bonds, they deferred some revenue, they deferred some expenditures that they were going to have to make to school districts and stuff. They ended up saving some almost $8 billion, bringing their reported deficit from $16 billion to $8 billion. At that time, the legislative analysts had reported that the deficit was closer to $18 billion than $16 billion, and in fact, she's being shown to be true in that prediction, in that the $1.2 billion just is an additional amount on top of the showed A. And this doesn't mean much some years, and then other years it's a predictor, but it is very, very short from predictions for the first 2 weeks of April. They're not sure where it's going to fall, won't know until May, but the state's financial condition continues to deteriorate, and as it deteriorates, it puts pressure on everything else within the economy, including local school districts. So we're involved in a double death spiral almost, if you think about it. The state's reliance upon local real property taxes is huge, because as real property taxes fall within the scope of revenues for schools and revenues for cities and counties, as those real properties fall, the state must backfill that deficit that's being created. So as property taxes are down, the state is required to put more money into the treasury for each individual entity, and as their own revenues are falling, where are they going to come up with that money in order to backfill the property tax problem? So it's a situation that has dire ramifications for education and all other state-supported programs. We just need to continue to watch carefully.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Any questions from the board? Thank you very much, Russell. Next, there's a resolution that the board will consider regarding year-end transfers. It's a oral vote, and it was prepared by Julie Lang, the Director of Fiscal Services, and be presented by Mr. Miller.
Thank you. Each year we ask that the board allow us to process our year-end budget transfers without the immediate approvals of the board. This is a blanket approval given to allow us to make our year-end closing adjustments. We do it as a normal and recurring event annually.
Any questions for Mr. Miller regarding that action? Seeing none, do I have a motion and a second, please?
I'll move approval of resolution number 12-07-08, authorization for year-end transfers.
We have a motion by Ms. Rogers. Do we have a second?
I'll second the motion.
And a second by Mr. Buckman, by Mark. Roll call.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers? Mr. Spadafore?
Is there a motion and a second?
I move that we pay Chris because he was busy doing good work for us.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second it, but with some discussion.
Okay, of course.
Do we verify any of his claims?
We'll get into
only yours, Walt.
We'll discuss the sub rosa aspect of this claim in a second, but we have a motion by Ms. Dickinson, by Adrian, and a second by Mr. Millar. Discussion? Hearing none, since the sub rosa is ongoing regarding this claim. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0.
Thank you for your service, Chris. I'm just kidding.
6-0. There's an abstention by the recipient, Mr. Unger. Next item on the agenda, you're welcome, is the professional learning communities collaboration time that will be presented by Dr. Matakovich, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our district for the last several years has been involved in the development of professional learning communities across the district. In the words of our superintendent, the purpose of a professional learning community is to make school a powerful place for children. In such places, children are at the center of whatever everyone does. We clarify what's important for students to know and to be able to do. We assure opportunities for students to learn these important things. We pay close attention to who students are, and what they know and what they are not learning by looking at their work. We refine our teaching based on what we learn together about our students. The structure we are promoting is important because it permits us to address these things. Our goal is a culture of professional inquiry, which holds each student as special and worthy of our best. Thanks, Dr. Valentine, for this direction. This direction has given us permission to change our paradigm and make a shift. This shift is to focus from teaching to a focus on learning, from an emphasis on what was taught to what students have learned, from coverage of content to students demonstrating proficiency, from providing individual teachers with curriculum of a professional learning community. It rests upon a shared mission of high levels of learning for all students. And in order to achieve that mission, educators create a common vision of the school that they must create, developing values or collective commitments regarding what we will do to create such a school, and to use goals as measurable milestones to monitor their progress. Morro Bay High School, with its leadership team under the direction of Mr. Zotovich, has realized this foundation. Like to hear from Mr. Zotovich and his staff what they have learned as a professional learning community in establishing this foundation. Mr. Zotovich?
Good evening, board, and fellow people in the audience. With me tonight is our Morro Bay High School Teacher of the Year, Mr. Scott Scalding, who will be speaking also of this issue. But before we begin, I would like to just give you a few highlights of professional learning communities development at Morro Bay High School and how we came to be the school that we are. In the early 1990s, we worked as a group of educators at the school to realize the fact that some of our students change classes each semester and that our teachers should be pacing themselves at that time we didn't call it this, but a common calendar so that students didn't duplicate the education from one teacher to another semester by semester. They were pretty much on the same page with the education that they were learning as they were moving through the year. In 1994, as we were doing that, new math textbooks were introduced to our math department. And our math group started the foundation of common testing calendars, and they also started looking and investigating and doing a great job with common assessments. Our district, through its leadership, asked for, and we did receive and give them, they started to develop math finals for the end of each one of the semesters. So by the end of each year, our students in certain math classes were doing common assessment, common type finals for our district. In 1999, as we all know, the California State Testing Program started, and once again, we re-examined what our very focused attempt at common calendars and common assessments. From at that point in time, you can see what's happened. From the year 2003-2004, our API has grown. Our students have been doing excellent academically. I just received notification yesterday from the National Merit Scholarship Society that five more of our students are in contention for next year. In the 2003-2004 year, we started our Late Start Mondays. And each Monday has a significant theme and a very special way that we approach. From department themes to common calendars to common assessments, we work through these themes and we change them if we need to as we start to refocus ourselves even more when we started to develop our WASC accreditation just 1 year later and we started working through that process. We realized that we needed to really spend some time doing our continuous improvement. And so that also helped us as we worked through what we were doing. In 2005-2006, we began to move towards a formal adoption of the development of a PLC. All of the department heads read a book by Rick DeFlore called Whatever It Takes. And we started a conversation about what do we need to do to make sure that every one of our students are successful? While we had already approached that theme in his book, he started to really help us kind of understand this concept. We asked the question, how do we reduce the number of students that have received an F, one F or more, on our campus? And we started working through this, and we've been doing this for the last 2 years, and from that, we've developed a very powerful RTI committee that is looking at all kinds of ways that we might change internally amongst ourselves at our school to make sure that our students are even more successful than they are and that all of our students are successful. We took excerpts out of the book Good to Great from Jim Collins and studied what those excerpts might mean for Morro Bay High School. We went to conferences of which Mr. DeFore, Mr. Buffum, and Mr. Knoll were present. The leaders in America that come from professional learning community concepts, they started the issue. We are just starting to read a book called The Art and Science of Teaching by Robert Marzano, where we were looking at the teaching methods and the actual art of how successful we are. We realized that we have put, at this point in time, we realized that through these years, we researchers have more agreement on the steps needed to make and embrace to help every student show continuous academic growth. And these steps are common calendars, common assessments, and establishment of strong, productive PLCs. I am proud to say that Morro Bay High School is significantly on its way in these three areas. The last thing I'd like to say, and then Mr. Scaldi will have a word, is that what makes it all work at Morro Bay High School is an unbelievable group of teachers, educators, people that really believe in students. They believe in change. They believe in moving forward. They listen to the things that are presented as we all present and go to different conferences, and they come back and they take these ideas and they mold them and they move them through the things we need to do. It's a very democratic group. We have a lot of conversations about a lot of different things. I can't compliment the teachers at Morro Bay High School enough. They are fabulous, excellent people who deserve all the praise in the world for where they've taken their high school in the last several years. Okay, I'm going to introduce one of those fabulous people right now. And as I said before, Mr. Scaldi, who's only been with Morrilby High School for a few years, is our Teacher of the Year. He teaches AP Econ, Government. AP Government, he's our peer helper teacher. He teaches some other government classes, and he is also our ASB advisor. He is an unbelievable jack of all different kinds of trades, and he does a fabulous job. And he has started our AVID program this year. We have 57 very powerful students in it, and he was an AVID coordinator in his last district. And I might say that currently we have 17 juniors that are going to be seniors next year, and every one of them who didn't initially just at the beginning of this year want to go to a four-year school. Now all 17 of them want to go, and we know that all 17 qualify to go, and we're going to get all 17 of them, if at all possible, into a four-year school right out of high school. So let me introduce Mr. Scott Scaldi. Scott.
Thank you. I appreciate the plug for AVID. I'm obviously a big advocate of it. As far as the PLC thing goes, as Pete kind of gave the background to it, and as I came into the school district 3 years ago, I was in awe of the collaborative time we were allowed. In my old district, which is Orchid Union, we were shooting for a lot of the things. The dorms, those were almost already in place because our group worked so well together. It wasn't a big problem. It was that centering theme of, are the kids learning? What are they learning? What aren't they learning? What do we want them to learn? Rick DeFore talks a lot about the essential standards. Of course, he comes from Illinois. I guess he doesn't know that California tells us what those are. But at the same time, that forces us to move on to the next step. Well, how are we getting this stuff across? And so we really do talk a lot about our craft. And while we all like to think that we put our own special spin on teaching and we have our own strengths, we always want to learn from other people. And the example that makes me think of how valuable this is I was on some committee in Orchid for a middle school teacher conference, and we were like an advanced team that went to go look at this site. And we're at some school in Lompoc, and they're walking us around on a tour that was supposed to take us like 20 minutes, and it took an hour and 20 minutes. The reason was they'd walk us through all the classrooms. And we're in a science room, my friend Anna Zucker stopped, looking at every project on the wall. Oh my God, I never thought of doing that one. Who is this teacher? I need to email her and find out more about this project. Of course, same thing would happen in eighth grade history, because that's my subject at the time. Oh, wow, look what these kids are doing in here. It's that contact of, what do you do with this? And it's that contact that I, as a government teacher, you know, wow, I have a really kind of a neat congressional simulation, but I'm looking for something better, you know, than just mock trial or something. You know, I'm always looking for new ideas, and where do you get them? Collaboration. And with our department, focusing in on learning, we really talk about how to better our craft for the kids, for the learning. And so I'm grateful for the time. I'm grateful for that cohesive concept of learning that focuses us. I think it empowers us as teachers. Pete and Dan and Bob, you know, they put it up. Hey, look at this, what we've got going here. You guys wanted to talk about the fact that we do have a certain percentage of our kids who get at least one F. What do you guys think? Go back to your PLCs. You know, they empower us to kind of make, instead of it being, you know, coming down from on high, we're part of the process. So it's empowering as well. So I'm an advocate of what we got going. I love my department, the whole school, I think, loves and benefits from the collaborative time. It's wonderful. And this PLC focus that we've been able to adopt, even though we've had this collaborative time over the years, it makes it even better for us.
Yeah.
And am I supposed to ask her questions or move on?
Mm-hmm. I was just going to do one more thing.
Good. Well, I'll get over to Pete. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure.
Do you have what's the difference in your view between collaborative time and PLC?
Our discussions aids, and so that becomes, well, that's a work ethic issue that we're also, you know, where do we value that in our system of grading? If a kid has a D-, but he's testing, you know, above proficient there, what do we do with that? And so we're having that discussion now. As he mentioned, we just started having kind of a reasonable discussion about grading. So I would argue that it's even more productive than before. Instead of just saying, you know, what are we testing, and we're still looking at our assessments, trying to make them similar, and then we value what we're trying to get out of our students, and then looking how well they did, and seeing, you know, can we change practices? How do we do that? You know, the goal would be, well, one teacher's weak on it. What'd you do? It's not what you do wrong. It's, hey, you know what? My kids aren't getting polynomials the way yours are. What are you doing that I'm not doing? It's that discussion we hope to have. And, you know, our department didn't have a hard time sharing that information. We're all good friends and good colleagues. We don't have a lot of that jostling for position. I don't want to give up my stuff and, you know, that kind of thing. But it's been a deeper discussion in our meetings on Mondays. I hope that answers it.
Thanks, Scott.
Just the last thing I'd like to say is the philosophy, one of the philosophies that we have at school that we want you to know is something I've been talking to staff about this because they like to, we occasionally talk about teaching to test and all that information. And I finally found something, and it was come out of Richard DeFore's book, Whatever It Takes, and he says, the most powerful fuel for sustaining the initiative to improve a school is not the desire to raise test scores, but rather the moral imperative that comes with a desire to fulfill and the hopes of those we serve and those whom we work. Our goal is to help our students be successful the rest of their lives and do really well for the next 10 or 15 so they are the most proficient at what they do no matter what they want to do. They want to be an architect, great. They want to be an auto mechanic, fabulous. Just that they're the best at what they're doing because we prepared them so doggone well coming out. And so that's our goal. It isn't about test scores. That's a byproduct of everything we're trying to accomplish. We're about the kid and about trying to help the kid be as successful as he possibly can in his future life. So thank you for this opportunity. And we, by all means, would entertain any conversation.
Yeah, I think
there's
a question to begin with, Pete. Thank you very much for that. Chris?
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting to me to hear the evolution of the PLCs and the collaborative time at Morrilby High School, because when you first started this out in 2002, I remember there was resistance from certain quarters about that and about what does this hour or 2 hours on Monday morning mean? Is that something that's important? And I'm not saying that it is or isn't. I'm just wondering if, for instance, if social science and industrial arts and sciences are, you know, technology that Ms. Rapucci is doing, is there any kind of need or is there cross-pollination that's going on between you guys?
We both can.
Okay, you go ahead.
Our CTE classes and our VAPA, Visual and Performing Arts teachers, all meet on our collaboration day as a group, and they talk about the issues that are going on for their group and the theme of the day and what they're working through. In some cases, they're lone teachers and they're by themselves, and they're talking about common assessments and common calendars. They're building their common assessments, common calendars, but they're talking to each other about that. One of the things we haven't done as well as we'd like to, and it is in our school improvement plan, that at least twice a year we kind of get the English department with the social studies department and the math department with the science department and work it that way. And we've done that occasionally, but we haven't done that this year. We've been pretty focused on other things. So go ahead.
I was going to comment, at our management team today, we are going through our SIP plan, and that was one of those things that we kind of addressed and said, you know what, this is one of those ones that we do, but we'd like to do more cross-pollination, like you say. And I would say that loosely right now, just that new RTI committee, the Response Intervention Committee, for our department, it loosely connects us to the rest of the departments because we hear back, Sean True is our guy who goes, and he kind of says, oh, this is what we talked about. We want to know what's going on. We talk about it. So it's loose, but there's room for us to grow in that regard.
I think there was another question down here also. Thank you, Catherine. And then Mark?
Yes, hi. Mr. Zotovich, what factor do you think your PLCs played in Morro Bay High School being named one of the best high schools in the country?
Well, like I mentioned, we have been in the PLC concept for the last 6 or 7 years. What I think about that makes us so strong is the fact that our teachers have embraced what our management team is talking and working through for the betterment of our students. They've embraced the common calendars. They've embraced the common assessments. They've worked through some of those issues that we have with those events and try to make the most of it as we possibly can. And I think that has just moved us forward. And as we see success, and our students are very successful, when we talk to our students that graduate and come back and say, boy, I was really so prepared for college, it was unbelievable. And we have, you know, really good stories like that that are coming back to us. When they started doing this 26 years ago, and how it's been a long, gradual change for them. When he first took over as principal, he was an assistant principal, and 3 days before graduation, the principal left and said, here's the keys, I'm gone. So he took over, and they decided that they needed to change something. And they had 1,600 students. Now they have 1,600 students. Now they have 4,100 students at that school. So in the last 26 years, what's happened is they've taken a students with an F rate from 56% to 1%. They've put in very powerful PLCs. They are a model high school in the United States that has people visit them all the time. They got to the point where it's got too much that they only do it 2 months out of the year. As you look through the different things that they've done, while it is very teacher-driven, teacher initiative, take the resources you have, make that powerful, how you can work through the resources without adding, if you didn't have any money, how would you do this? And they really have put together a very, very powerful model of which what ends up happening, more and more schools in the nation started figuring out how to do this on their own, and then all of a sudden they got together as a coalition of schools and started saying, boy, look what you're doing, look what we're doing. They started to talk. And then from another offshoot of that is RTI. As people started to see what schools were doing, like what they were doing, they said, wait a minute, there's another way of identifying potentially a student as special ed, and that's by look at the interventions that they're doing, and let's start a thing called response to intervention. And that model came from that as they started to work through it. So it's just something for us to think about.
And then I think we have a couple more. Adrian and then Chris, please.
I noticed that you mentioned three things, one of which was common assessments. But when you got right down to the bottom line, it sounded like you said, what makes it all work are unbelievable teachers. And I keep hearing that's the key. And even in the collaborative process in the community sharing, it's not so much developing. This is what I'm hearing. Maybe it's just my own paradigm that I want to hear this. It's not so much developing these common tests as sharing creative ideas and approaches, which are kind of more dynamic, really.
In response to that, I guess I'd say that, yes, teachers find it empowering because it enriches their ability to teach. All of us want the latitude to help kids learn in the way that we think we can do it best, but we want to learn great new ideas. It takes a little bit of the emphasis in our meetings away from creating a common assessment to creating ways to be creative in the classroom in helping kids learn. So that part is enriching. But I think the reason, I mean, I've only been here for 2.5 years or mm-hmm. 2 2/3.
I think that is the
teachers,
key, though.
The teachers at Morro Bay are ridiculously nice people who are good at their job.
That's awesome. One last question. I like the way you said all those things. You talked about test scores are a byproduct, but isn't it possible that test scores might be disconnected? And I think there's some students who are successful who didn't do that well on some of the STAR testing and vice versa. I'm a little, I gave the STAR test today, English language, and they make us sign this. I think it's part of a sort of a con, in fact, where you have to sign a paper that you're not going to, of course, copy the test, but you're not going to discuss the test, the material on the test, with anyone. So there's no way you can get together and say, did you see that first selection? I mean, that is so ridiculous. And did you see the second thing? And that, you can't even talk about that. It's like illegal to discuss how terrible the test was. And I say the ninth grade test was terrible. For my students, it was worse than a waste of time. It was a negative experience. So I don't know about the test being necessarily a byproduct. I think in some departments, math, I was talking to one of our administrators who thought math scores were probably, more valid than certain other types of tests. But I'm glad we're not putting our whole emphasis on test scores and other kinds of ways of just students being successful in their chosen fields of talent and expertise.
Chris, I think you had a comment or question.
My thought is that my experience with Morro Bay High School is that we're not specifically talking about standardized testing. When you guys are talking about common assessment, you're talking about common assessment that the departments are doing. Are you not?
That's
different than the STAR
have
testing.
Unit tests that are fairly common. They address similar, if not same, issues in similar fashions of assessment.
Which allows you as teachers, I'm guessing, to get yourself in the feedback loop about whether, in fact, what you're intending the students to learn is what they actually are learning based on what they're testing. Is that maybe not what's happening? Part of what happens with common assessments is that it's a feedback for the students as well as the teachers.
And our academic achievement of our students hasn't declined. And we're going to lose a few more this year, and we're going to lose some next year also. So we're looking, sometimes it's difficult to find the teacher that we're looking for. This year we had a difficult time in math, but it ended up working out very well. But it didn't. We didn't really find that person until about 6 weeks into the school year. So we're looking for, I'm as a principal, I'm speaking for me now, I'm looking for five things in a teacher. One, they need to love the kids, and they need to really love to teach. Two, they have to know the standards, embrace the standards, and want to teach the standards. Okay. Three, they have to understand that this is going to be a collaborative nature, and they have to work with the rest of the staff collaboratively to work together for common goals and common things, which all are for kids. Okay. I want them to know something about technology, and I'd like for them to be clad or be clad. Okay, and those are the kind of five things we're looking for. We've been able to replace our teachers that have retired with people that are excellent, probably, of course, a lot younger, but excellent as they work through things. Mr. Scully is one of those that's coming in, and the year that he came in, another social studies teacher came in. They both had 10 years' experience from very powerful school districts that came to us, and they just enhanced what we were doing. So as we lose teachers and we bring new people in, we're looking for those people that will continue to help us grow in those areas that we think are very, very important for our school. And we've been very, very successful in finding those teachers.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, Mr. Zodovich.
Thank you.
Mr.
Thank you very much, Scott.
If it pleases the board, we have three other schools present tonight to give little anecdotal information to you relative to their experience. And if I could modify my presentation a little bit in order to ensure that they are able to speak with you, and certainly your questions of them are very important, and so we want to be able to have time for that as well, if I may. Mr. Zodovich noted the fact that we've been engaged in professional development. We've developed teams at every school. We've participated over the last 3 years in these workshops conducted by the County Office of Education. We are in the process of building capacity at our school sites using national experts, and we're very pleased to have this kind of support, and the support comes from difficulty in learning. And how can we extend and enrich the learning for our students who are proficient? This is a huge task for staffs to deal with. They look at their strategies to ensure that our struggling students receive additional time and support, but they don't do it in isolation. They do it collaborating with teams. So no matter who their teacher is, we want to ensure that all students have access to the core. Our staff's committed to that across the school district. Another big idea of professional learning communities is a culture of collaboration, which we've touched on. It's a systemic process, and in our school district, our teachers work together to analyze and improve their work together by looking at their classroom practices and also student results. We mentioned early that our school improvement plans are built upon those performance results, and our strategic plan is built on that collaborative process, and we've realized that we're focusing on our English learners and our special education students who need structure and coordinated support. We hold collaborative conversations around or as team members, and we're making public the fact that we have goals, strategies, materials, questions, concerns, and we're looking at those results. In our schools, everyone belongs to a team that focuses on student learning. Building a professional learning culture is a question of will, a will of a group of staff members who are determined to get together to find a way to answer those questions that I've surfaced. Del Mar school staff has found that way and would like to share their approach with you as they have the will to address the needs of their learners as a PLC.
Good evening. 2 years ago, I did as a Title I teacher at Del Mar, I did an action-based research on the collaborative practices at Del Mar. And basically, the results were teachers want collaboration time, and there isn't enough collaboration time. Last year, we started a process through substitute release time where our teachers could meet with our guided process reading aids because we felt it was important for them to have time to talk about what was going on in their GPR classes. We also had a couple days throughout the year which enabled our classroom teachers utilizing the specialist time that we have in first through third grade. So while three of my first grade classes have students in one's in the library and two of them are at PE time, all three teachers have that common time where they can get together every single week and talk about what's happening in their classrooms and with their students. And then in the second grade, same thing, classes in library and other classes, two classes are in PE and another class is in music, freeing them up to collaborate. And then same with the third grade. So ensuring in the first through third grade regular weekly ongoing collaboration time, which has been absolutely amazing. And I have a couple teachers here today to talk a little bit about the types of things that they've been doing in that time and the value that they find in that time. A couple different parameters in our fourth through sixth grade classes, because as you might know, they also have PE and music. But in the fourth through sixth grade, it's contractually prep time. So it's not set up the same as collaboration time. They do meet once a month on a Wednesday from 2:30 to 3:30, and they also have had a few release days throughout the year where we bring substitutes in, and they're able to get together with the person in their grade level and do some collaboration. So I have with me tonight probably one of our newest teachers in the district. This is Kristen Bigelow, and she's a third grade teacher, and Marianne Britton, another third grade teacher, two of my third grade team, to talk to you a little bit tonight.
So I just prepared something. As a new teacher, I've found collaboration to both be significant and beneficial. Collaboration has helped me to evade a trial and error approach to teaching and has brought me closer together with my colleagues to strengthen my skill and my confidence as a new teacher. We've formed professional relationships that have allowed us the organization and resources that would tire the energy of a single teacher. Collaboration makes specialized tasks more manageable, stimulates new ideas, and promotes consistency in our school's curriculum and instruction. Weekly collaboration has helped me to be better equipped for the classroom, which ultimately benefits my students and their success.
Thank you.
Hi, and I'm Marianne Britton, and this year I'm teaching third grade. And professional collaboration time, our PLC, it's all about collaboration, getting together, sharing ideas. And after 20 years of teaching, I don't leave a Thursday PLC times of math, so every day they're getting the regular third grade standards, but then they're also being helped out to close that gap on what they're needing extra support and extra help on. So that's one of the ways we were able to use our PLC time, which was an hour that we have, and we do not feel that that is even enough time. We need more time. And also during that PLC time, we have helped align one another on our standards. I'm on chapter 12. What chapter? What lesson are you on? We're all together on the same page. We're pulling each other along, making sure we're all together, that all children have equal access to all the standards. And Scott and Pete, you'll be happy to know that 70 of our third grade students have Avid binders. You can come and do a binder check, a binder shake, and they are ready to continue on the distinguished schools that we have on the coast. So as you know, PLC is good for teachers. It's even better for children. And that's why we are all here, to do what's right and what's best for children. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I think there might be a couple of questions also, and we very, very much appreciate you coming tonight and taking time out of your own schedule. Chris?
Yeah, one question I had when you showed the calendar up there. Are you finding that not only are you able to get specific grade levels together
But are you able to get great cross-grade levels together? Because I think working, you know, as an educator myself, looking at the articulation between grades is really important. And it seems like that would be difficult given the times that you have. Comment on that at your own risk, I guess.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And we looked at this as a great starting point, but definitely not an end point. I felt it was extremely important within the parameters that we had to figure out how we could make it work, and this is how we made it work. We still do have one Wednesday a month where they can meet with cross-grade level or with specialists, and we do have a couple other days throughout the year, which isn't enough. But ideally, if I could have my whole staff have collaboration time at the same time where they could do grade level up and above the vertical teaming as well as regular ongoing time to meet with a specialist, okay. I'd love it.
I'm curious about the elementary school level because I understand about common assessments on the high school and junior high school levels. Are the elementary schools working toward common assessments too?
They are, yes. Different grade levels are at different places. For instance,
I'm wondering if you're sharing or are they aware of what the teachers, this change that's happened at the school, and are they, because I think for them the collaboration technique and sort of being a learning community would work mm-hmm. as well.
No, that's a good point. And I think some of our teachers are doing more with the idea of classroom meetings and giving the kids a chance to talk and solve problems. And some of the teachers are real proactive in having classroom discussions where the kids are making decisions about the types of things that are happening in the classroom.
Yeah, it's very empowering. We go to class votes all the time.
That's it, Mark. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much for that, Mary. Dr. Patakovich.
Very good. Another big idea of PLCs is a focus on results. Every team participating in an ongoing process of identifying where their students are performing, what kinds of goals they need to set, and how they can work together to achieve those goals. Monarch Grove has participated over the course of this last year in realizing Title I status, but also evolving as a professional learning community. And they've used results to shape their learning community. So Dr. Skoulis and his staff are here to share how they've realized their professional learning community.
Thank you, Dr. Matakovich. Good evening, board members. It's a principal's dream, really, to draw on the talents of the team and get everybody organized and working together for the betterment of everybody. And a professional learning community not only allows that, it almost requires that. And the current professional learning community at Monarch Grove has roots that run back many years. The working professional relationship we have together has laid a fertile ground of trust amongst all of us. We trust each other as professionals and recognize the positive intentionalities of everyone. That is, we believe that the actions and the words of our colleagues are really based on the best interests of the children. The major catalyst for us currently as a learning community came when we learned we would receive an influx of Title I funds. And Russ Rayburn and our RSP teacher, Jenna Bragg, who were participating in the RTI committee, and they brought in a lot of valuable information. And we had skilled teachers like Kathy Zodovich, who by their own enthusiasm and initiative had been collecting and implementing valuable ideas and strategies. This synergy led us to define our important next steps, and I will let them speak to that. But I will tell you that one of the focuses, the results of our work so far, has been what we're calling a reading assessment wall, which is pictured right there. Last year it did not exist. Each of those cards represents one student with a lot of information and data about that student and their reading achievement levels and their interventions that they've been participating in and so on. And we get together so far at the end of both trimesters to talk about each individual child in the school, what they've been doing, and how they've been doing, and what are we going to do about it. And that's been very powerful. So that's our reading assessment wall. That's not the only element of our work so far, but it's one that's really easy to understand and kind of a powerful visual model as well. You can see, I took these pictures today. So at the end of the second trimester, the section closest to you in the upper right-hand corner, they're broken out by reporting strands, advanced, proficient, basic, below basic, and far below basic. And you can see on this end, these are the advanced. And as it goes farther down, there aren't that many cards down at that end. So that's pretty good. We're happy about that. So here's Kathy Zotovich, who teaches first grade and reading recovery at Monarch Grove.
Well, first of all, I wanted to thank all of you for allowing us the opportunity to come this evening and speak to you about PLCs, and it's an honor to represent Monarch Grove. Our approach to creating a custom educational program for our school has been a learning process from the start. We resisted the temptation of taking on another school's Title I program and molding it to meet our site's needs. Instead, we chose to develop our professional learning communities focused on teaching and learning reading and writing. And during the year, because of the PLC, I've been able to provide mentorship to other teachers on staff about reading and writing program that we're doing in the comprehensive literacy model. At our site, creating a custom educational program for our school continues to be a learning process based on problem solving, thinking critically. We, like at Disney, have an opportunity to do Imagineering in education, and the PLCs provide us that opportunity to put many minds to work, to discuss, to collaborate, and reflect on the meeting of the needs of all of our students. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One important part of any learning community is the idea that there needs to be ongoing assessment of what you're doing. And as a part of that, Dr. Schools pointed out for our students, that's what's represented by the assessment wall. It also is a nice visual that shows that all students, these students are everybody's student, that they belong to all of us in our community as teachers, that the teachers, the kids in my class aren't just my students. So a lot of the discussions, we meet every trimester to discuss about the children's progress, and it's not just teachers, but all educators who are involved in their education are present. So there's a rich discussion about each of us working with that child so I can understand what the resource teacher is doing with children that are from my class, from our EL. So everybody is on board, and we have there's a type of collaboration there between the classroom teacher and all different parts of our educational community. The other thing is it's important that we as teachers reassess periodically how we're doing and are we fulfilling the goals that we set out to fulfill. And we need, so there are many things that we have accomplished. We started with a shared vision, shared goals. We wrote out what that was. We made our goals for the year, but it's just as important that we go back and we say, so how's it going? We have many challenges ahead. We do not have the perfect PLC, but what it is what drives this, our learning culture is that we are learning. When people truly are learning something new, they get excited. It's not just the intellectual excitement, it's an emotional excitement. And this excitement is focused on the child. And it's our hope that we broaden from a professional learning community to everybody in the school and related to the school as part of the learning community. We are creating a community not made just of professionals, but all individuals who are stakeholders in our school community. And it's our hope these stakeholders in the future are going to include. Thank you.
I had a quick question, then Chris has a question. This is for everyone who's presented from the schools. I was curious, and this is a general question, since different sites have had professional learning communities developing over a period of time, some different periods, some different goals, and some different approaches. Has the energy, the process, the integration around these change the flow of information, the decision-making process, and the implementation of learning in the classroom to benefit students over the last several years as it involves the administration, principals, and the teachers? Has there been a real shift in this happening?
When we first got together in our Title I group, I don't know how to say this, but I don't think anyone made a distinction of what our roles were of the committee. We decided we had a challenge to do, and we pooled our information together who could best do different things. For instance, Dr. Skoulis, he's working on that. We were curious what was happening at other schools for Title I, and Dr. Skoulis decided to take it upon himself to go and find out what was happening at those other sites. We also learned about research by different people, Reading Recovery, Arkansas model, and so certain of us on our committee said we're going to go research that, and then we came back and we brought back that information together, something that one individual could never do. And the idea is that it's the group and the collaboration that's going to be the powerful thing that moves things along, I think. One other thing, too, is we do book clubs, those of us who are involved in this, and that's also something we're trying to introduce to our kids. So the idea that what we're doing as teachers is something we expect from our children, and I have embarked on this in my class, and I let them know this is something, this is the model that not only I'd like you to do as a group and discuss books, but what I'd like to let you know is we as teachers meet once a month and we discuss books too. So I don't know if that's the same thing.
I know that in Mr. Rayburn and Ms. Sotovich's class, this their participation in this collaboration has made a huge impact on the students in their classrooms, positively.
Okay, thank you very much. Chris and then Adrian.
Dr. Skoulis, I think one of the things that I've been reading is going on at Monarch is there was some difficulty trying to get the late start or early release.
We're all very busy all day long with our assigned tasks and roles, the principal, the teachers, with the students, and to pull people together is a challenge. I'm impressed how they've done it at Del Mar. We have done sub-release time to assessment wall talks. Teachers have gotten together outside of the workday to collaborate on the development of the entire reading program that's represented there. And that's basically how we have been doing it. We are looking forward to having some, banking some minutes and getting some time during what would normally be a school day on a couple days before the end of the school year. See how that goes. We've been working with the community, and we have addressed some of the concerns, and I think we've kind of turned that around so that we do have the support of our parent community now.
Okay. And just maybe this is a question for some of the team members. One of the concerns that I've heard expressed about, possible concerns I've heard expressed about professional learning communities is that it would be a top-down process driven by the administration. My understanding of professional learning communities is that it's a collaborative process among administrators and teachers. How does one prevent, or how does a group prevent that top-down control from happening and have it arise from all of the members of the team so that it benefits everyone? And obviously, we have a highly professional group of teachers, so that's a concern I've heard, and I'm not sure if that can be addressed, but I wanted to put it out there, and I'm curious about it.
Well, I can speak for myself, and I would hope Russ and Kathy would concur with what I'm about to say, is it's consensus-driven. Nobody is smarter than everybody. And I'm the principal, and I'm the lead person on campus, but I don't have all the ideas. We sift through them together and decide on the group focus. My job is to make sure that everything gets in place so that it can happen after we decide what the goal is. So I hope that, at least for me, addresses your question.
One of the people who basically probably may be the most responsible for the whole learning community idea is Peter Senge. And he really emphasizes that when you start a professional learning community or situation is you don't start with structure, but you start with people. And I think at least we didn't know about that when we first started, but that's really been our emphasis, I think, and our site, is that the people Not only he doesn't necessarily say this, but we're not only
time. We decide what is important, what is necessary to help the students, to empower the students, and to make us better teachers. So it is definitely a well dispersed.
Thank you for that. And then
I just wanted to add one thing.
Kathy, sure.
We were just asked by Dr. Skoulas to create what we wanted to discuss at our PLCs just this past week. So I really want to reiterate that this is not top down.
And then Adrian, then Marilyn, then Mark. Oh, of course.
There, like I said earlier, there are challenges, definitely. This is like anything. It's man-made. I mean, we have our challenges and we make missteps. And the idea is to work together collaboratively and to respect each other's expertise. There are some difficult problems because, especially in elementary school, sometimes we will find something that we firmly believe is in the best interest of the child, which may come up against something that the state has mandated us to do. And I don't know about how to answer that. I mean, there's a strong feeling, I think I could say for most teachers, is that there are certain standards that are inappropriate for children. And where we have friction or whatever, it's really difficult as a teacher when you really firmly believe, based on research, that you look at something that's really a benefit to the child, and yet you're being told by the state to do something else. And I don't have the answer to that, but that's something as teachers, at least at the elementary level, we run into almost every day.
Thank you, Russ. And then Adrian?
I just wanted to thank you all and say it's very reassuring and inspiring to hear you share these experiences. And I like the way Monarch Grove and all of you are customizing these opportunities for your own places and allowing all the voices and the individuals to frame it. So that's exciting. And Mark talked about modeling collaboration and teamwork for students, but I can clearly see that you're modeling the joy and love and excitement of learning for students, which is awesome. So thank you all.
Marilyn and then Mark.
Okay. Well, Chris asked one of my questions, which was Mrs. Gould and Mr. Zotovich had both explained to us how they were able to create, or we know from the block scheduling and the late start Mondays, how they do it at the high school, and then how Mrs. Gould did it. So my question also was, how are you able to see how successful you've been?
I just want to say one of the really interesting conversations is determining proficiency or what level a student is performing at and how do we determine that. Just that conversation alone is very powerful because the state does it by the STAR test, but we don't have that every so often, so we have to go on what's actually happening in the classroom. It's a great, interesting discussion.
Well, I recall seeing the interventions. Mm-hmm. You know, and some had several, some had one, some had none, whatever. So, you know, your staff was really working with all of these children who needed their time and attention, and there has been a shift. We could call it towards proficiency or growth of some, however we want to term it.
Progress.
There's definitely been growth and change, and I applaud you for that. And then I'm wondering about district-wide collaboration, cross-school collaboration. Is that occurring at all? And okay.
We'll get there.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Mark.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate getting this report, and I did take the time to read it. And in it, it talks about the parents and the role of parents and community, and I'm hearing a lot about what's going on at the school, and is it a function of building up to bringing the community in involvement and getting parents involved, or is there a step where you are involving parents at this point? Sorry to bring you back up.
Could I speak to that? As far as in my classroom, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm doing a weekly newsletter, and it's targeting the specific language that I'm working on and addressing in my learning communities with my students on the specific languages of comprehensive literacy.
So I have a newsletter that will go home and address the things that we're doing as a community, as the classroom, but then also I'm sharing the craft of the lesson that I'm doing with those students, whether it be on schema or whether it be on nonfiction text, that kind of thing. And my parents have really responded in a very positive way that the kind of conversations that they're having with their own children at home are far more powerful than they could even possibly imagine with a six-year-old. So I want to just share that.
Okay. Thank you. And then thank you, Dr. Matakovich.
Only samples of what's going on in our school district. So I just want to acknowledge the commitment of our educators to take the step into moving their schools to professional learning communities. And I'd like to move on with collaboration, because that was the piece that you wanted to address and kind of along the lines of answering Mrs. Rogers' question. You know, collaboration is people working together interdependently and looking at their professional practice in order to improve the results of their students in classroom content. This collaboration time allows staff to focus on those critical questions that we mentioned earlier in the presentation. If I could share with you that over the past several years, our secondary teachers have collaboration time. So you heard from Mr. Zotovich and the Morro Bay staff that they continue to use weekly collaboration time to discuss student results, standards implementation, department issues, instructional calendars, common assessments. They address the needs of their individual students together as a group. All schools have teams who have participated in the leadership development program over the last several years. And this has allowed staffs to collaborate over research that focuses on student-centered learning activities. At the district level, we've been holding discussions around our English Learner program, which you've targeted in our strategic plan. Our English language staff has provided guidance at our principals' meetings, and I'd just like Mrs. Delskamp to briefly highlight what we've been doing as principals and district administrators around this topic of our English learners.
Just briefly, there are two main areas of this discussion, this PLC discussion around our English Learners program that has occurred with our principals. One area has to do with best practices. So with my English learner background, I've been able to share some of those best practices with our principals so that they know what they can look for in the classrooms. But we've also read articles together. I forgot to bring the book, but a book that plan objectives that all tie in what we're trying to do for our English learners, along with reviewing test data by subgroups. And in addition to that, our English learner teacher on special assignment and I made site visits, individual site visits, meeting with the principals and EL staff to determine and to assess what's the EL program at those sites, and then to come back together in the principals' meetings to decide, okay, where are those areas that we need to begin first to improve our programs. You heard tonight mentioned RTI, and we've addressed that also in our principals' meetings. For example, part of our work in the RTI committee and that flowed over with the principals was we organized a field trip to a local school in Atascadero where our principals were able to go see a model for RTI. And since then, several of our schools have organized their own little field trips with some of their staff members to go back and look at that model again. But we did the same thing with Monarch Grove. We organized a field trip and had our principals meeting at Monarch Grove so that we could see what was going there. So just in summary, our principals are engaged in similar discussions, reading together and reviewing and researching models and trying to improve all of our practices.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rita. Dr. Matakovich?
Yes. You've heard from our elementary staffs, and they are in the process of developing their own site-based collaboration plans. Hawthorne School staff has realized a weekly collaboration time in a schedule by banking minutes during the week. Their staff has realized this effect of this time to be able to coordinate their work around the performance of their students. Mr. Collins is here tonight with Ms. Andre and plan to share their perspective as a seasoned elementary school, 2 years of collaboration, weekly collaboration time under their belt.
Thank you. Yeah, we did start, I think, the year was 2005, 2006 in the spring. And it's kind of interesting how TCT came about at Hawthorne. It was almost because of the staff, and I think it was because of the staff, saying we need to meet more often. We need to find some time like the middle schools and high schools to make this work, that they started, you know, coming to me, bringing it up at staff meetings, leadership, and we tried to start looking at different ways. 10 minutes in the morning, so instead of starting at 8:30, we started at 8:20. And instead of getting out at 2:30, we got out at 2:35. So we're baking 15 minutes a day. And on Wednesdays, everyone gets out at 1:35. And it's been wonderful. We're in our second year, the teachers are able to get together every Wednesday. When I first started working on this, when the teachers were talking to me, I had to go to the parents. We put it in our newsletter. We met with the PTA, school site council, talked about the benefits of this. One of the things that I heard from the parents was, if you're going to do this, we'd like it to be every week. It's consistent so that we know what day it's going to be. We don't have to look at the calendar and figure out, is it this Wednesday or next Wednesday or is it going to be Monday? And so that was one of the things that we did hear from them. So when we started to implement it, we decided that was a good practice to get into. So we have been doing it. This is almost the end of our second year, and it has gone extremely well. The teachers run the agenda. We have a binder, three-ring binder, where they take minutes. They write up the agenda so I can look and see kind of what they've been talking about. Everything is above board. And Jamie Andre is going to tell you a little bit more about what they do in those meetings and maybe some of the effects it's had with our school.
Yes, thank you. I want to just share a little bit about what happens in the actual meeting. The majority of the time we meet in cross grade level teams where the focus is on student learning. My second, third grade team began this year by looking at the assessment results for our current students. From this data, we were able to form reading groups that would ensure that students were reading at their instructional level for a portion of each day. We were also able to determine which students were in the greatest need for a double dose of reading. And these students were then placed into our Read Naturally program or our ELD program to receive additional language support. The weekly collaboration time allows us to continually monitor our students' progress and keep the groups fluid and flexible. When we're not focused on student progress, the focus is on best teaching practices. Teachers dialogue about what is working in their classrooms. Often one or two teachers will have attended a training or workshop. Did I mention that we call it TCT? Teacher collaboration time. So our TCT time has become the ideal setting for teachers to share what they found to be most valuable from those in-services. It's still a work in progress. This is just our second year, and we continue to modify our collaboration time. After our first year, we realized a need for the staff to meet as involved and the students. As Mr. Collins mentioned, we keep minutes of each meeting, and we close each session with our next steps. And I've truly come to treasure my Wednesday afternoons with my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that, thank you very, very much. And there's a question. Chris?
Yep, got another one. When I was at your open house, I specifically asked every teacher that I saw there about your collaboration time, and to a teacher, they all valued that. It feels to me like Hawthorne has gone the farthest in being able to create this for their students and for a school-wide community. The piece that feels to me that it's been probably the biggest thing that you've been able to do is to bank the minutes and to be able to have the regular collaboration time. One of the things that as I look at our board agenda item, it said that as long as the plans don't change the transportation schedule. Mm-hmm. And so a question I have for you is, how are you able to accomplish what you've done without it messing up transportation for your school, and I guess by extension for all of the other schools.
Well, I think one of the benefits that Hawthorne has is that we are a neighborhood school, and we only have one bus that picks up after school. And because of that, and there's about 20 kids that ride it. And so because of that, what we were able to do was when we have our 135 dismissal on Wednesday, we have our regular homework club, and kids who ride the bus go to that. And so and for most of the kids, it's like a minimum day every Wednesday. They love it. So most of them want to go home, and so they do. They walk home or ride their bikes or whatever. But those kids who do ride the bike or do want to do their homework can go into the library. And so it's not an inconvenience for the parents because their kids can still ride, and we didn't have to have the buses have an earlier pickup. So that was one of the ways that we were able to work that out.
John?
Mark, yes. Just
real quickly. In the research that we were asked to read and just – general sense, having kids leave school at 1:30 would seem that it would be an impact on parents because of daycare and having latchkey kids. I'm just curious, and if you can't do it now, give me a phone call. But how did you overcome that with the parents? I mean, the research we were given was parents are going to be the hardest group to bring on board.
Right. Well, again, when we first started our discussions in 2005, 2006, we also had Parks and Rec behind it. The parents understanding how much we wanted it and how it would benefit, you know, it really went smoothly, and we've been able to work out the wrinkles. One of the things that we do have is we don't have kindergarten or first graders go to homework club. But on Wednesdays, we do allow first graders to go because they would be... waiting around with nothing to do. So our first graders on Wednesdays do go to homework club waiting for the bus, and it's okay because we don't have, you know, as many kids that day anyway. So it works out for the best. And again, you know, at Hawthorne it works, and I think a lot of it's because we are a neighborhood school, and so many of our kids, and you guys remember not too many months ago we're talking about safe routes to school. So we have 200 out of 300 kids, you know, that are walking, riding their bikes, or, you know, carpooling every day. So it's kind of a neat thing. So we're kind of the exception, I guess.
Kurt, I had just a quick question about the collaboration time. And is it both meant to address issues of teacher support as well as student support in the classroom, the scope of it?
Yes, I definitely think so. Again, our focus is students, but again, you can't help but have that affect teachers and what they're doing. And so I think a lot of times that when the teachers get together and they're talking about, you know, how they can best serve students, sometimes they'll say, you know, we need to have more of this. That's how we got into DIBLES, because we found out that just having a few assessments during the year wasn't enough for us. We want to know how kids are doing right now so that, our, as Jamie said, our groups can be fluid and they can be flexible. So if a kid is reading at a level 24 and that group is meeting in another classroom because, like in second grade, we move all of our kids during language arts time, we need to know and have some hard facts that, yes, this child is ready to move. So teacher said, we need to find out more about DIBLES. So that was a topic that came up during our TCT time. Later, two teachers went out and were trained, brought it back, trained probably 8 staff members now. And every child in our school has been DIBLES several times this year. But again, that helps us do the best for, not dribbled, DIBLED several times this year.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Kurt. Dr. Matakovich?
Yeah, we're just about there now. Just want to emphasize that the strategic plan has supported us in terms of teacher collaboration time. That release time has been available to us. Thanks for your support. And to let you know, we'll to evolve to community of learners involving our whole community. So you can see from the energy of the representatives tonight that we're really committed to making this happen. I'd just like to close with the fact that we hope that every school, every department in our district that begins the PLC journey will come to believe deeply in and, more importantly, act upon the advice of Ralph Waldo Emerson, that what lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are insignificant compared to what lies within us, and that's what's going to make the difference for our children. So we hope we've provided an overview for you of where we are with professional learning communities, and want to thank you for your participation tonight.
Dr. Matakovich, we had another question, Chris.
I wanted to thank everybody here. As we look at, I think, our strategic planning and as we build our budget, I'm feeling in my experiences that professional learning communities is or are a good thing. Hawthorne has really taken it to the degree that I understand that is really working. I know that our other schools are trying, but it seems like being able to carve out that time, when I'm hearing that Hawthorne is able to do that as an elementary school, I know Morro Bay High School is doing it, Los Osos Middle School is being able to do it as well. And my question, and I understand that we'll hear back from the administration, what is it that needs to happen to be able to support that collaboration time across the district on a regular basis? And from a board perspective, what is it that the board can do to be able to encourage that to happen and allow that to happen for the schools so that they can create the kind of professional learning communities that reflect the culture of their schools?
Well, I think you've done that already with your focus and the strategic plan supporting us with resources and also the commitment to make this happen for our students. What we will look forward to is presenting your recommendation, and I think that if you give us a little more time, you heard the will of the people involved tonight, I think we've come up with a plan that we can support that would not entail too many additional resources, and we just would like to be able to have the time over the next month or so to be able to work those details out. We're excited about presenting you.
In terms of a professional learning community, I think Monarch is absolutely stellar, and also Del Mar, just in the spirit that you generate and what you've accomplished. So I think Chris is talking about time, and maybe you'd like to have more time.
I think too. What I heard from the two other principals is that they would like to have, however they can make it work, that they would like to have consistent time within the day to develop the things that they're finding are working in their schools. And that's something that Hawthorne, for a number of reasons, is able to accomplish right away, but that I think is a goal that I'm hoping Dr. Matakovich is talking about for a presentation to us in about a month.
Thank you, and I want to thank Dr. Matakovich for bringing this presentation together, and I understand it's an ongoing process, and the process is ongoing because there's so many people that are involved. And I just wanted to say for the board that it's clear that the essence of this is to benefit student learning and also their own personal growth. And I can't tell you how much we appreciate the contribution from each and every teacher and principal and administrator, because this really takes and requires the additional time and commitment and energy. And I think this is what public schools are all about in terms of what it provides our children in the community. So thank you for coming tonight and taking out of your own personal time in addition to your teaching today and your working today. Thank you. I think next on the agenda is an item regarding budget priorities, and Dr. Valentine.
Could we pause for just a minute maybe to let the room clear and then jump into
we
that?
We can pause, yes. Oh, sure. Just so the sound.
It's actually an ego thing.
I think we'll do a five-minute break. And
I didn't
we'll
want to start there. Speaking only to see
no,
the entire room leave.
No, it's okay. We'll do a five-minute break. Resume at 9:10, please. We're going to resume the meeting. with item number 6, who is on the issue of budget priorities, presented by Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. At the last board meeting, under the topic of revenue enhancement, the board expressed a desire to participate in visioning for the school district and identifying resources necessary to make that happen. And I want to take a little bit of time tonight to kind of launch as background for the conversation, probably not to accomplish all of that, but to frame that discussion about visioning and finding resources. I think you've heard tonight that the strategic plan has really served the purpose of visioning for the school district. The plan is structured around a broad district mission and specific board goals, identified critical issues, specific objectives, and budget commitments, and we've included all of those in the backup tonight. The board has identified the closing of the achievement gap, the achievement of our most challenged learners, English learners, special education students, students of poverty, as the highest priority for strategic planning. But there are other priorities as well, technology, visual and performing arts, district infrastructure, and so forth, not all disconnected from the primary objective, to be sure. And I think if one looks at the board goals, the objectives of the plan flow directly from them. One of the problems with strategic plans is that they pay lip service to the obvious and don't have any real substance or commitment. And we've worked very hard to avoid that. I'd like to think if one knew nothing about our strategic plan, they'd be able to infer the plan by looking at our budget. In tonight's backup, we share specific objectives and the dollars attached to them. The three-year total is nearly $4.9 million, and there are specific objectives attached to each of those. In tonight's meeting alone, we heard about AVID from teachers, enthusiastic. Our objective is that for students of poverty and others for whom college is a distant thought, we will dedicate resources to put college within reach through tutoring, counseling, information campaigns, and assistance in applying for abilities and so forth. And all of these get channeled into the district mission and goals, but may receive less recognition than what is being added through strategic planning. And there's sometimes the perception that if something doesn't rise to the level of priority when adding district programs, then no attention is being paid to the topic, which is not true. For all of the things listed here as things we have added through strategic planning, still the majority of the district's attention and energy actually focuses on the regular program. And in fact, add-ons can be problematic in that it's possible to overdraw the capacity of the school and the classroom unless there's a seamless fit. A third problem with strategic plans is that in trying to do so much, they don't deeply accomplish anything. It takes a great deal of discipline to truly take on an issue. The difficult part of strategic planning is not in coming up with good ideas. There are millions of them, and anybody can find them and back them up. The tough part is choosing which ideas to not do, because they interfere with more important ideas. It's a very difficult personal choice. It's a very difficult professional choice. It's a very difficult political choice. It is far easier to do a little for everybody and keep folks happy rather than solve problems. The final problem with strategic plans is that educational organizations don't stick with them long enough to achieve an effect. The wave of the plan rolls through the school district, barely disturbing it. And so as we revisit the plan and consider what we want for our district, we encourage that that view be focused, disciplined, and realistic. I draw your attention to the chart on page 6.2. In the left column, we list, and you can also see it on the board if you like. The color coding is somewhat helpful to this. We share the chart on page 6, too. In the left column, we list some of the exposures that we have to cuts, and on the right, we list some of the assets we have to address those exposures. So little is known about what the final budget picture will be, state final budget picture, that we need to look at this as more of an object lesson than a reality. The key elements that we anticipate are budget cuts similar to revenue limit districts, and for us, a similar percentage of our revenue limit would result in a $950,000 salary increases and state cuts. The total of the known cuts, cost increases, et cetera, adds up to about $2.8 million. On the right column, we speculate an approach to addressing the $2.8 million, and we've identified a number of ongoing and shorter-term resources which add up to $3.5 million, and it looks like a comfortable fix. The devil, however, is in the details. We're not confident that the state budget cuts will not get worse. In fact, we're confident that they will. Open contracts with our employees raise the question of employee compensation, recognizing that each percent of salary applied across the district adds up to $425,000 per percent. Depending on priorities, whatever cushion we might have in the short term can quickly disappear, and then the difficult decisions will start. If and when that happens, the district can look to one-time reserves, cuts to the strategic plan, or regular program cuts. We've included in tonight's backup a listing of the strategic plan dollars which have been added over the past 3 years. Any program addition will be funded through cuts to other programs. We stated earlier that good ideas are easy. The budgeting process is not. When the embracing of one idea means the dissolution of another, the real work of visioning begins. The board has done strategic plan budgeting in good years, but even in the so-called good years, the process is one of triage. We solicit $7 million of ideas to which we will apply $1 million worth of resources. $6 million won't happen. One factor we've left out in this analysis is revenue enhancement. As Russell Miller shared at our last board meeting, we have raised over $4 million from sources beyond those which predictably fund schools, and we will continue to explore those and any others that the board directs. Finally, I reiterate that the numbers shared here illustrate a way of thinking more than a confirmed budget picture. There will be more challenges than are presented here, and perhaps more assets. And we'd be happy to entertain questions that you might have about information shared or to let the board engage in its own discussion.
I think we have a question. Thank you, Dr. Valentine.
Sure.
Chris?
One of the things that you talked about last time was an outreach to the principals and the curriculum council, I believe, for reviewing the money that we spend in the strategic plan and our priorities in the strategic plan. How are we doing with that, and do you have any information on that you'd be willing to share at this point?
Yeah, thank you. We have gone out, and I've shared with the board under separate cover the document we were using to solicit input from the organization. From the management side, we've gone to Title I elementary principals, we've gone to elementary principals, we've gone to secondary principals, we've gone to classified management, and we've gone to district management. Through curriculum council, we've gone to Title I elementary teachers, non-Title I elementary teachers, middle school teachers, and high school teachers through our curriculum council meeting. We actually modified the task a little bit over time. We asked the principals to take a shot at $4.5 million, and being the good folks they were, they spent $4.5 million of the district reserve and didn't touch a program. So we told them to do $5.5 million in the middle of the stream, and then realized that essentially what we were looking at is if we were cutting $1 million a program, where would we actually do that? When we got to curriculum council, we simplified the task and said, forget about the reserves at this point, prioritize $1 million of budget cuts, none of which means that we're cutting $1 million worth of programs. It simply indicates what kind of prioritization is going through the minds of the people who work in the organization.
Any other questions for Dr. Valentine?
So when we are asked to, within the next month and a half, we're going to be presented with a built budget for the public, when we look at that budget, how are we going to make a determination on what the final budget that we'll be asked to approve the first or second meeting in June will be based upon, aside from a crystal ball?
Yeah, and there is some crystal ball in room, and we have to make staffing decisions before the final budget is going to be finalized, I'm virtually certain. And we're going to take the information from the May revise. We're going to take a look at the resources that we have. We're going to analyze what the impact is on basic aid. And based on the best information that we have available to you, we're going to bring you a budget recommendation. We'll also have a contingency plan if the budget is different than the assumptions that we're currently making.
And then before Adrian's question, I think, Mr. Miller, you were going to add something.
Only to add what, or to reinforce what Ed said at the end there, is that there will be a contingency plan that the board will be able to access from staff at the point in which the state budget is actually known. The point being is we're obligated, as Chris is pointing out, that by June 30th we have to adopt a budget, and at June 30th we won't know very much more than we know today, except for maybe a little more clarity on his May revise. He'll have some priorities he's going to attach to the budget he's going to try and get the legislators to pass for him. But at this point, he's neither a Republican or a Democrat. He has neither support from either side. He has a tough row to hoe there. Our task is going to be in August or September, when the budget is finally passed, to bring to you those things prioritized that have an impact on us, if there is such a thing that's going to happen. So we'll pass a budget in June, but we'll almost certainly be modifying it as soon as the state passes its budget, whenever that might be.
Okay, thank you. Adrian?
Regarding that little activity, we got that was in the board had access to that. So one night before Robert was home, I had just gotten home, and the house is still cold, one of those cold nights, sitting on the rug by the heater. So this is a good setting to think about how you're going to, you know, cut down to the bare bones of no comfort. I tried to do that activity. It's very difficult. But I asked you at that last meeting if other groups or whatever wanted to go through that activity, because it's an interesting activity. Yeah, and you said they could. I was just curious if anybody applied to do that.
Well, one of the things that the operation of the curriculum council is that they had the exercise in hand a couple of weeks before they were asked to participate in it, and they were asked to solicit input from their sites, not to go through the exercise per se, but to solicit input on the questions that the exercise would raise.
Any other questions at this point? Any other comments, Dr. Valentine?
That's it.
Thank you very much for that. Next on the agenda is our action consent items. I'll go down the list from 7 to 15. If anyone would like any item pulled, please let me know. Item 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 8, acceptance of donations. Item 9, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 10, approval of purchase orders. Item 11, approval of management plan for financing other post-employment benefits, application for fiscal solvency plan funding. Item 12, approval to submit the early intervention for school success grant application for Del Mar Elementary School. Item 13, approval to submit the early intervention for school success grant application for Pacheco Elementary School. Item 14, approval of waiver of California High School exit exam requirement for students with disabilities. Item 15, approval of representatives and alternates to Athletic League for 2008-2009 school year. Hearing no pools, I'd appreciate a motion to approve 7 through 15 as stated.
I make such motion.
We'll do the motion and have discussion.
I make a motion that we approve items 7 through 15.
Adrian, second. Adrian makes the motion. Mark Buckman makes a second. Open for discussion.
And I just want to say, last time I had pulled the furniture and equipment requests because of the shredder, and I got the question answered, and it was very interesting, and I just wanted to point that out to the public, that the shredder is actually in support of a program that we have for our adult developmentally disabled folks, and supports their functional learning skills for that particular program, and so I think it's a great thing, and thank you for clarifying that for me.
Thank you, and I also would want to thank and recognize the effort of the professional staff regarding the two grants under 13 and 14, all the time that went into obtaining those for the district and the students. And now, any other comments regarding the motion and the second? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Let's move to any action or any advance agenda, please. Adrian?
I would like to recommend that we have an agenda item on the technology situation at Laguna and just in general in the district. I know we passed something recently.
Computers are going to be picked up in a truck and hauled away, and then there's some other discussion that what's going to happen is the plug's going to be pulled and they're going to be disconnected from the internet, but the school can keep the machines. And I'm wondering, do I have that right, and what's the controversy?
Well, the controversy is larger than just the issues that we were talking about here. The sites always have the option to keep the computers that have been taken off of line and use them as standalone computers. There is no requirement that computers be thrown away. The second piece of it, or maybe the first piece of taking the computers off the line, I think is the center of the controversy, is one of the focuses of the controversy, is are these still serviceable computers that we should keep online, or are there reasons based upon system security and based upon support of computers and staffing levels and things like that argue for them being taken off the line? Different opinions on those questions, part of the controversy. The second part of the controversy, and we can share this as we talk about it later, is the fact that Our middle schools received an influx 5 years ago of a number of computers that were over and above the stocking level that we can support in the school district, but they were able to do that through a district-written grant, which provided not only additional hardware but also additional staffing to support it. Now, our understanding at the time was that come 5 years later, there would be a site-based decision as to whether to continue with those computers or not. Part of the issue is, was that communicated clearly? And here, 5 years later, there are some computers that are going to go away. Why do they have to go away, and who should pay for their replacement?
So if I can single you out, One of the emails talked about some very specific software that the teachers would like to hang on to use on these computers, which they'd like to hang on to, and I'm not a geek enough to understand this, but I understand that there's, would it be a local area network?
The only thing I'm going to ask, and I'll ask okay. for some input from the rest of the board members, not that there's anything wrong here. The internal discussion at Laguna relative to what would happen at the end of a five-year period with their system. And so what I would ask first, there was a request by Adrian to have an agenda item brought up. Now, I would also suggest that we maybe could deal with this initially by a Friday information packet, so we could find out exactly what the situation is at Laguna, what's happened relative to the planning, the communication, the funding, and what are the options now to deal with that situation and then go from there rather than have it on the agenda. But that we can go from that point. You can either ask for a second or we can get the background information and then go from that point forward. So I'll open that up to the rest of the board.
Well, I would be more in favor of doing it in the Friday packet. I don't think it needs to be an agenda item. I remember when we voted to have to do exactly what the plan is doing. I thought Dr. Valentine's explanation or summary of those events was very clear. Sounds like a site management issue. I don't know why the board needs to be involved. So.
Okay. And also, I would add that I'm very interested in finding out what had transpired at Laguna over the 5 years regarding the communication of that situation as it progressed to the end of the 5 years and how it relates to our present situation with the concern the instructors have relative to the availability of those computers. So is there a second at this point, or do you want to withdraw the request to have an agenda item? Okay, there's a request by Adrian to have an agenda item. Is there any second board member that's willing to support that at this point in time?
I was going to support the notion of an agenda item. I'm going to wait until after I see what's in the Friday packet before I do that. But I do. I'm not interested in opening up the whole idea of the technology plan. I think that, as Dr. Valentine pointed out today, we have a plan and we need to go forward on it. But there were clearly some issues that went on. I'd like to make it real clear to folks what the expectation was 5 years ago, what's happening today, and clarify for myself what the options are for those computers. Understanding, thank you very much, Dr. Valentine, for sending out that information today, by the way, about network security and the idea that when we have older machines online.
Provision of information about how Laguna got to the point where it is today, involving all those other issues that have been discussed. And is that good? Okay. And Marilyn?
Well, I just wanted to add that I think that Los Osos Middle School was the recipient of the same number of grant-funded computers. So what applies to Laguna applies to Los Osos as well.
That's correct.
Okay. Are there any other comments by board members or any requests for future agenda items? Okay. Seeing none, I believe we're at that point in time that some people hate to see happen, but the meeting is at an end and we can adjourn, I believe. Thank you.
Walter, can you stay?